I'm Marco Werman, and you're with The World. We're a co-production of the BBC World Service, PRI, and WGBH here in Boston. I can't tell you if President Trump's nominee to lead the CIA will be confirmed. Gina Haspel faces a lot of skepticism in the U.S. Senate on both sides of the aisle, but I can say this. We're going to be hearing a lot more about Haspel ahead of the Senate's vote on her nomination, especially about her role in the enhanced interrogation program the CIA developed after 9/11. Some say it was a torture program. We'll get into that in just a moment with retired General Michael Hayden. He's a former director of the National Security Agency and the CIA, and he has a new book out called The Assault on Intelligence, American National Security in an Age of Lies. In it, Hayden writes about what he calls President Trump's, quote, routine distance from the facts. I asked Hayden if he thought his concerns about the president were getting through to Trump supporters.
I don't know, because the president's approach to both making decisions and explaining decisions is not fact-based, and he is product, not creator, of a broader trend inside American society. So that really is the issue of the book and the reason I wrote it, in terms of describing to America how it is we are changing and whether or not we can survive that change.
Yeah, I mean, with 63 million votes, I'm sure that there are a lot of people out there who actually see you as one of the players in Trump's proverbial swamp. So even if your book does make it to Trump supporters, do they want to hear what anybody in Washington has to say?
Great question. So that's why I drove back to my native Pittsburgh and had my brother Harry fill the back end of a sports bar last August with about 40 Trump supporters, most of whom I knew and had grown up with, and said, hey, what are you people thinking? And we had a really good 2+ hour conversation in which I really tried hard to understand their motivation. And frankly, it was, I go to work, I go to church, I send my kids to school, I join the PTA, I volunteer, I pay my taxes, and no one's paying attention to me. Why is that? And so I did try to develop an appreciation for the kinds of Americans that voted for President Trump, even though I viewed him to be in some ways dangerous.
I'm just curious, what was your takeaway after that sit down with those Trump supporters just about how they see the truth?
The winds of globalization have been at my back for 50 years. And for many of my old friends, the winds of globalization have been in their face and no one has seemed to care.
In your earlier book, Playing to the Edge, you defended U.S. officials who had performed waterboarding and maintained that it worked, those officials maintaining that it worked. And you say in your new book that you're not calling for the return of torture, but I'd like to know whether you still defend those people who said torture worked.
I defend the people in the agency who conducted the enhanced interrogation program, and sorry for using the indirect euphemistic language, but that's what we describe. But we don't concede that the techniques that we were authorized to use by the Department of Justice met the definition of torture, which is a very contentious statement, I understand, but I'm trying to reflect the reality that the officers were working under at the time.
So let's get into what's been going on this week with the Senate Intelligence Committee hearing on Gina Haspel's nomination to lead Central Intelligence. She was asked by two different senators, if President Trump gave you a direct order to waterboard, what would you do? And her response was, I don't believe the president would ask me to do that.
Right.
Is it hard for you to imagine President Trump asking the head of the CIA to waterboard a detainee in 2018?
Right. So despite the campaign rhetoric, which I took offense to and write about in the book about waterboarding and worse because they deserve it, and I decomposed that statement on all levels, I am absolutely convinced Gina Haspel will never do it. And let me tell you why. Not because she or I am repudiating the agency's past. I am telling you we will not repeat it. More importantly, Gina will not repeat it. Let me tell you why she will never do it. Because we did this on behalf of the American people. We thought it was a reflection of what the nation wanted us to do at that time. We thought the nation or the administration or the political class had our back. They did not. As administrations changed, agency officers were hung out to dry, put through legal processes. No serious CIA director would direct his or her officers to go out and do this again with that historic experience. Gina has too much love for the agency and the people who serve her to make them vulnerable one more time. So I'm fond of saying that You know, when the president says something not related to reality and everyone else in the room goes into what I call north-south autobob and say, you're right, boss. Gina Haspel is the woman I want in the room to stand up and say, Mr. President, a private word, because I know she will.
Haspel was also asked by several senators why all the documents relevant to her nomination were not declassified, a sort of blanket declassification, as you know, has happened plenty of times in the past when there is a strong public right to know. So why not now?
Well, first of all, I'm not sure we crossed the threshold of a strong public right to know. What we have is the agency telling the people on the Senate Intelligence Committee all they need to know. What it is they want to do is to be able to make it public. And I'm not totally convinced that that's always accompanied by the most noble of motives. And so these are the people who vote. In a democratic representative government, we entrust our elected representatives with making some choices for us. And the intelligence committees were created back in the 70s with the clear knowledge that you cannot conduct espionage by plebiscite. And so we set up select committees who would make these decisions on our behalf while still protecting legitimate secrecy. This is just the latest turn of that wheel.
Doesn't this set a dangerous precedent, though, when you don't declassify documents related to such an important position as head of Central Intelligence? I mean, are all hearings going to be basically semi-secretive at this point?
Oh, no, of course not. And an awful lot about this program has already been declassified.
Haspel is at the head of the declassification, though.
Well, I understand that, but I just said legitimate American secrets.
The destruction of evidence does raise concerns about Haspel, and it also echoes what we as citizens can know and what the government and some officials in the government know. So let me ask you this. When the CIA and NSA and FBI all say that Russia played a role in the 2016 election by carpeting social media with various ideas and narratives and memes about the candidates and America, and the president says it's not true and the rest of it is all a witch hunt, what do you think that's done to public confidence in the intelligence services?
Yeah, you come to a really important question and, frankly, a core area of the book. When the president attacks these institutions because he doesn't like what they're saying or doing, he, number one, makes life very difficult for the leaders, which has a real human toll. But he also erodes not just the institutions but the public's confidence in these institutions. And I view that as the greatest danger we face now. These immediate issues are important. What did the Russians do? Did anybody help them? They're important. More important is the preservation of these broader institutions that have served us for decades, if not centuries, in terms of our own self-government. And here I'm talking about FBI, Department of Justice, the intelligence community, and so on.
So where do you think the split between American intelligence services, which you believe deal in reality, and the president, who often doesn't, where is this going to take the U.S. government and ultimately what the people, the citizens, believe is real and not real?
Great question. And that basic issue is us and how we make decisions. And we've drifted in towards this post-truth culture in which tribalism trumps, no pun intended, data. And that actually flies in the face of the Enlightenment values that have governed Western civilization since the 17th century.
General Hayden, have you imagined what it'd be like briefing President Trump on, you know, all the stuff that you used to brief the presidents on?
I have on occasion, and I think I would find it difficult. Look, to be fair to the president, he is the way God made him. He's instinctive. He has an almost preternatural confidence in his own a priori narrative of how the world works and so on. Well, here's a better way of putting it. Michael Gerson used to write George W.'s speeches. He's his best writer. And Michael says President Trump lives in the eternal now. He doesn't appreciate much history. He doesn't consider many consequences. And the essence of intelligence is context. And now you have a summary of the issue briefing this president. He just doesn't naturally trend in the direction of that which it is we are designed to offer.
So do you think you'd have the patience?
H.R. McMaster tried. H.R. probably has a lot more patience than I do, and it didn't work.
General Michael Hayden, former director of the National Security Agency and the CIA, his new book is called The Assault on Intelligence. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you very much.